Over the years, I started out, when I first came here, one of the duties I was informed of that I would have to do was a radio program. And I thought, radio program, what's that going to be like? And so I remember the search committee explaining a little bit to me about it and said, oh, it's not a big deal. I realized later on that none of them had ever done one. And so they didn't know whether it was a big deal or not. And so what we used to do back in those days is it was a two-man job. One man did the speaking and the message, and another man had to run the equipment. And we used an old reel-to-reel tape recorder. Now, if you messed it up, well, that was just a bad thing because there was no way to go back and fix it. You just had to start over. And invariably, the mess-ups didn't come 2 minutes in. They came 28 minutes in out of a 30-minute program. Nowadays, I do the program sitting at my desk on my computer using GarageBand. I have a microphone that plugs into my computer. GarageBand comes up in front of me. I can pull songs from iTunes and put in there however I want. I can fade them in, fade them out, clip them, cut them. If the train goes by in the middle of one of my messages, I can just clip that part and go back and fill it in. It's an easy thing to do. But between those early days of beginning and kind of the hardship associated with doing things analog, and then the latter days of me doing everything digitally now, and then sending it via internet uploaded to the FTP site for Fidelity, during that in-between period, Jim Scott did the program for me. Now, I would go over and preach a lot of those messages in Jim's basement, and he would record them. And I remember him going through all the technological advancements that took place over those years. When we started out at Jim's house, we were doing reel-to-reel there too. Then he had an 8-track, and he was so proud of that 8-track recorder. And it wasn't an 8-track cassette recorder. It was an 8-track reel-to-reel, but it would put 8 different tracks on one of those magnetic tapes. And boy, he could manipulate that. And if I messed one up, he'd just go back and put it on a different track. And it was, he loved that recorder. Then he went to it was called DAT, I don't know what it stands for, some sort of digital tape, a little bitty tape. That never took off, but he had one. And then finally he ended up doing it on the computer the way I do it now. And oddly enough, a blind man showed me how to learn to do this recording. But eventually got to the point where, because of the digital stuff and because of what we put online, he would take my sermons from Sunday morning and he would edit them, which obviously required a lot of editing, and put them down into a format that could be played on the radio and fit into the program. He'd do the music, he'd do the intro, and he'd do the closing statements and kind of wrap it up, or I would. But he would always call me and he'd say, hey, holidays are coming. I want you to do some holiday messages. You come over and do messages. Now, there were two things that happened. One, he knew that we'd get fresh stuff because I'd have to prepare and do a sermon specifically for Thanksgiving or Christmas or Easter or whatever the holiday happened to be. He'd get a fresh message from me that would be just that. Two, he knew that if I came over there that it would probably be around 11 o'clock, and by 11:30 I would be done recording it, and then we could go to do come in. So we did all of our recordings on Thursday, and we went for chicken day at do come in, and I loved it, and he did too, and it was great. Now, here's why I tell you all of this. And it's not just because I'm getting old and this is what old people do. It is that. It's just not just that. I did the radio program Thursday morning. And as I was getting ready for it, I thought, you know, I need to do a Thanksgiving message. Jim wouldn't appreciate it if I didn't do a Thanksgiving message. So in his honor, I did a Thanksgiving message that played this morning at 8:30 and on KTUI. Every once in a while, I think, you know, what's the point of doing that radio program? Nobody listens. But, I mean, Beth listens. I know that because she tells me every week that she listens. But nobody else listens. But that's not true. A lot of people do listen. And every year I kind of go through this thing where I wonder, is anybody out there? And then somebody will show up. I asked my Wednesday night group one time recently. I was kind of going through one of those phases where I was wondering whether this was a valuable use of time or not. And one of the people who was there said, well, I don't listen to it. And I thought, well, I don't need to know everybody that doesn't listen to it. And he said, but I know two people that listen to it that are homebound. And they tell me every time I see them how much they appreciate the ministry of Temple Baptist Church through that radio program. And I thought, okay, I'll keep doing it. So I guess there's no point in me even going through that cycle of not doing it or thinking about it. Might as well just go ahead and lock it down, you know. And I mean, we've done it this long. We've actually been doing this for over 1,000 years now. And Temple Baptist Church has been involved in that. I don't know how long. I've got to find out. I didn't ask Gene before he got away this morning. He would probably be the one that would know what year we started that. But it was certainly going strong when I came. But since the church predates the radio station, I would assume that somewhere along the way it happened early on. So y'all can start kind of thinking about it and come up with a date when we started that. I'd like to know. I did the radio program, Thanksgiving message, but I knew that today we were going to be doing Lord's Supper. How do you combine Thanksgiving as a holiday emphasis and the Lord's Supper? I mean, there's some things that are obvious, but some things are not. In that radio program, borrowing the illustration that I used in the opening of that radio program that I did last week, I read an article that talked about things that people are grateful for when they gather with family and friends for their Thanksgiving meal. If they take the time to kind of go around the room and tell what they're thankful for, what are the top vote getters on the internet? Well, here are some of the top vote getters. One of the top vote getters for things that people are thankful for was a job. Now, people that have been without a job are going to even be more grateful for the job that they have. And so people mentioned that they were grateful for work or for whatever enabled them to provide for families. And we can all understand and we can all appreciate and relate to that as these things change and fluctuate, especially in the climate we live in today. People are grateful for their stuff. And so material possessions are things that we are grateful for. We talk about how we have a higher standard of living in the United States than any other place in the world. Like 70% of the world's resources that are produced end up being consumed in one nation. I don't know who calculates these things and how accurate they are, but we do know that that is certainly true and that we have a very high standard of living that has become commonplace. So much so that things that a generation ago were uncommon have become commonplace in the world today. The middle class now enjoys a level and standard of living in the United States that used to be reserved only for upper class economics. So we're grateful for our stuff. I'm using stuff as a generic term because I don't want to go through your cars and your toys and your things and your whatever. Just stuff. We're grateful for the food. Who gets together with a family and gathers around the Thanksgiving table that doesn't have food on it? We're hosting Thanksgiving at our house this year. And so my parents are supposed to be coming. And in fact, that's in a little bit of jeopardy now. I have an aunt that my dad sees after. Actually, they argue over who looks after who. I think it's the blind leading the blind, really, is the way it all works out. But anyway, Diane has been diagnosed this week with colon cancer. And she's going to have surgery on Tuesday, and that was the day they were leaving to come here. So they don't know whether they're going to be able to come at all or if they're still going to be able to come on Wednesday as they plan. Right now they're planning that she'll have the surgery and be fine and be able to come home. They'll still be able to come. Anyway, I was talking to him. He was telling me all this yesterday. And he said, and by the way, so-and-so gave us some dressing, and it's frozen, and we'll bring that. I said, no, don't bring that. And he said, you don't need it? I said, I don't need it, and I don't want it. I don't want somebody else's dressing. We're going to have mom's dressing. And if mom can't make it, Kathy's going to make it. Kathy's going to make it, and she's got a recipe, and we're going to have mom's dressing. Because mom's dressing is like mammy's dressing, my grandmother. And that's the only dressing that's worth eating. Ever. It's old-style, southern, cornbread dressing. It's not that gooey, sticky, Yankee, white bread stuff. Because ain't nobody want none of that. We all have our preferences, don't we? I don't want any alien dressing in my house on Thanksgiving Day. And I can't control the ingredients if it comes from outside. And it'll end up with something in it I don't like or don't want. And so this has to be the way it is. And so I told him, I said, don't bring that. He said, well, what about the sweet potato pies that she made? You want her to bring those? I said, those are okay. By all means, bring those on down. We'll be glad to receive that. And so we have the food. Now, we're blending together traditions. Because we're having it at our house, it's going to be influenced from Kathy's tradition. Whereas we always have this big pan of dressing, and they do too. They always have mashed potatoes and gravy to go with it, and they always have noodles. I don't know where the noodles comes from, but they always have noodles. And so we're going to have noodles and dressing and potatoes and stuff. They do gravy, and we do it a little different. Do y'all do giblet gravy? You know what giblet gravy is? It's, if it doesn't have the giblets in it, it's just, I don't know what it is. It's just kind of thick water that's kind of white looking. It's not really gravy. It's because it's not cream gravy, so they can't qualify for that. You got to put the giblets in it. The giblets, the heart and the gizzard and the liver. And my grandmother always boiled a few eggs and chopped those up and put in there too. So you got to have boiled eggs in there. Somebody said, are you out of your mind? I don't know. Maybe so. But this is how it's got to be. And if it's not going to be like this, it's not even worth having. It's just ridiculous. So you gather for the meal. Everybody's got their preferences, and you know, and you got all the food arrayed and all this stuff. And then, my gosh, when we get through with the meal, there's enough starch that your shirt will get stiff just from wearing it as it oozes out of your pores. And the naps. We've had people that have eaten with us that didn't take a nap but slipped into a coma. And so this is an amazing thing. So we're grateful for the food. How can you look at the abundance and what is arguably the obscene amount of food gathered on a table and not be somewhat grateful? So number two was grateful, or number three was grateful for the food. People are grateful for their health. That's one of the things that's always on the list. We're grateful for their health, and they'll talk about it. And you know, and, well, we're just glad we could be here again. We're grateful for our health, and you know, it's good to be vertical and upright and all that kind of stuff. When we go on about that, the number one thing that people are grateful for at Thanksgiving, when they go around the table and they offer their appreciation, the number one thing, easily the number one thing, is they are grateful for family. Now, I don't know if that means all family, you know, like weird Uncle Willie and, you know, his strangeness. Are they grateful for that, too? I don't know. We just sort of throw him in, you know, and it all blends together. And we're just grateful for family. Yeah, we'll take weird Uncle Willie on Thanksgiving Day. Rest of the time, they'll keep him away from me. And so you've got, you know, this thing. So here's my question. And this is the question that I posed from the article. If all of these things are the things that we are most grateful for, what happens when we lose our jobs? What happens when our health fails? What happens when we can't be together? And what happens when we no longer have those connections, or we do not have that wealth or that abundance or the food that's on the table? What happens? Are we ungrateful then? Or do we just become neutral? Not ungrateful, but certainly not grateful either. Where is your thanksgiving if it's disconnected from those primary items? What are you thankful for then? It's a good question, and it's one that I don't offer as a means of trying to belittle the importance of family and relationships on earth, or to take away the significance of God's provision, whether it be through food or possessions or things of that nature, or whether it is something that God has enabled in us that we express through a career or job or something that allows us to contribute not only to our own families but to that of others as well. I'm not trying to belittle or take anything away from that or the gratitude that you should feel in regard to those things. I want to enhance it so that it takes on a whole new significance that may have previously been overlooked. That's what happens when you combine Thanksgiving and the Lord's Supper. That's how gratitude becomes significant, because now what happens is this reminds us that what we're grateful for most is grace. Listen to this verse. You don't have to look it up because I'm not going to be here very long anyway. 1 Corinthians chapter 1 verse 4 says this: I give thanks to my God always for you because of the grace of God that was given you in Christ Jesus. I am grateful for the grace that was given to you. I am grateful for what God has done that has transformed you. I am grateful for the way that God has taken His grace, and in the application and transformation that it has wrought in every one of us, it has taken all of these other things that are expressions of life itself and has given them a whole new significance. So that my gratitude now is governed by your grace. So much so that even in the absence of any or all of the previously mentioned items and reasons for gratefulness, our grace remains secure. I think that is an amazing and marvelous thing that not only enhances the celebration of Thanksgiving, but gives an added meaning to it, so that we too can share with the great apostle when he says he is thankful to God always because of the grace that has been given. I want you to think about it for a moment. Grace is what enables us to be good stewards of the possessions that God blesses us with, so that we use them not just for our own selfish ends, but we use them as an expression and extension of His ministry. We see ourselves not as owners, but as managers of His varied graces that He has bestowed upon us, so that now every time you spend, every time you give, every time you do something, it becomes an expression of stewardship that brings glory to God. Even the smallest thing, just a few dollars worth of stuff packed into a shoebox, sent around the world, becomes a treasure to a child. And that child, at some point or another, prayerfully will understand that the reason they received it was not just because they didn't have anything else, but because someone was inspired by grace to give. Every gift. You see, physical things take on a whole new significance, so that we're not grateful just for our own pile. We're grateful for the privilege that God has enabled in us to share that with the world around us. Our gratitude is for the grace that brought it into our lives in the first place, but it is also for the grace that allows us to share it with the lives of others, so that our possessions and our wealth and all of the stuff that we think of in this physical realm, all of those things become expressions and extensions of God's grace when they are devoted to Him. And we are not owners and holders and keepers, but we are managers and sharers and givers. He said, I give thanks for the grace of God, because it is the grace of God that transforms our appreciation and understanding of the relationships closest to us. This morning we were studying from John's Gospel again, a story of the raising of Lazarus from the dead. And you remember the story how Jesus, when he came to Bethany, Martha greeted him and she said, if you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died. And Jesus said, well, your brother's going to live again. And she said, oh, yeah, I know, in the last day and the resurrection, yeah. But that didn't mean anything to me, Jesus. Right now, that doesn't do anything for the pain and the loss that I feel. Right now, that doesn't resolve the conflict that is raging inside of me. Right now, that doesn't overcome anything. If you had been here sooner, your power was sufficient to heal him when he was sick. It's not enough to raise him when he's dead. That's what she was saying, even though she didn't use those words. And Jesus said to her, Martha, whoever lives and believes in me is never going to die. Do you believe this? She says, I believe you're the Messiah. I believe you're the Son of God. In other words, no. Now, don't be too hard on her, because she is every man, and we all feel that way. I can't tell you how many times I've prayed for someone and either had the thought or the feeling inside or someone else expressed it and even said things like, you know, if we'd have prayed for him sooner. You mean the progression of a disease somehow poses a barrier to God's ability to heal? No more so than death itself. Let me tell you something. What the Bible teaches us about Jesus is that he is Lord of all, over all. There isn't anything that's a barrier to him. Does that mean that dead are going to rise? Not necessarily. But if they don't, it won't be because he's not able. It will be because he hasn't willed it. And that's a very different matter. Jesus said to Martha, "Whoever lives and believes in me shall never die." The grace of God transforms the relationships that we have with other people so that we now see that they belong to the Father in every situation. And every one of us is eternal. None of us is ever going to die. It doesn't matter whether you're a believer in Christ or not. You're never going to die. Everybody is made eternal and everybody is going to live forever. The only question that remains is whether you will live in the presence of God as a member of the family of God, having been saved by the grace of God, or whether you will fall under the judgment of God and be separated from God. But everybody's going to live forever. When we are grateful for grace, when we understand that the grace given through Jesus Christ, and we agree with the apostle when he says, because of the grace of God that was given to you, what we are saying is that God's grace transforms us from lost to saved. It transforms us from death to life. It changes us from distant to close, from outside to inside. He was grateful for grace because this was something with lasting eternal quality that takes those relationships and helps us to see them as eternal. Grace. God's grace is something that so transforms and changes us that it changes and transforms everything that we experience. That was true then. It remains true now. In fact, Paul said that not only does it change us, but it changes what comes from us. In Romans 1:8, he said, "I thank God through Jesus Christ for all of you because your faith is proclaimed in all the world." He was not only grateful for the grace that changes us, he was grateful for the way that it extends beyond us. What are we known for at Temple Baptist Church? Well, it depends on who you talk to. Some people don't like us. Or they maybe have nothing against you, they just don't like me. And I'm sorry that occasionally I put you in the position to not be liked because of me. I don't do that intentionally. In fact, I find it a mystery. How anyone could not like me just blows me away. But I know it's true. Some people don't like us as a church because of positions that we take upon which we refuse to compromise. It has been said that we're judgmental or that we are exclusive. Neither of those is true. In fact, all of us are broken, sinners, redeemed by grace. All of us. None of us has the right to be judgmental, and any of us that is, it's just foolish. It's not about that. Never has been, and it never will be. Some simply manufacture things in order to remain distant or just justify some, you know, I used to go to that church, but so-and-so hurt my feelings, and so I'm not going back. So it's somebody else's fault that your feelings are hurt and that you are living a life of utter disobedience to God and his truth. Is that what you're telling me? Well, I wouldn't say it like that. Well, how would you say it? Because any other way you say it, it still means the same thing. I can tell you that God is not going to hold somebody else accountable for the bad decisions that you have made. Just you. Now you know why they consider me judgmental. I'm just not gonna let you blame someone else for something that is only in your purview to fix. So some people don't like Temple Baptist Church because of what they know or what they think they know. But for those who know the truth, I would hope that they don't know that we are nice people, or that we are non-judgmental people, or that we are open, or that we're friendly, or that we're loving. While I want us to be all of those things, I would hope that what they know is that mostly we are transformed by grace. And that we are what we are, not because of anything we have done, but because of what Christ has done in us. And our goal, our challenge should always be to live in such a manner, to speak in such a manner, to extend beyond any limitations of our own geography or whatever, in such a manner that others would know Christ because of us. Not that they would ever say so, but that they would always know it's because of Christ. I don't care whether we factor into the equation in a way that people understand or recognize or not. I only care that they know Christ. That's what this is about. That's who we are to be. And that's why when Paul said he was grateful that the gospel was proclaimed beyond the limitations because of the grace they had experienced. So he could see grace that changed the Corinthians. He could see grace that was extended through the Romans. And he could see grace that was now reaching beyond his own limitations in ways that others were being saved and were coming to the truth that he would never have imagined. That's something to be grateful for. Now, what does that do for us this Thanksgiving? I'm still planning on a pile of food and a gigantic nap. I'm still planning on the circle of remembrance. I'm still planning on family, friends, and football. I'm still planning all those things. I'm going to continue to be grateful for whatever God allows us to share in this life. But I'm going to be reminded that all of it, all of them, is because of grace. Not because I earned it, not because I deserve it, not because I'm owed it, but because in His mercy and His grace, He has made it possible through Jesus. So that everything is because of Jesus. And where did that happen? It happened at the cross. When He shed His blood, when He offered His body. That's what we remember in the Lord's Supper. We remember the shed blood and the broken body that is the expression, extension, and reality of grace that makes it possible that our sins are forgiven and that the grave poses no threat. This Thanksgiving, may God bless you and your time with whomever it may be, in whatever situation or circumstance it is. With the knowledge that the grace that He has given is not only sufficient for whatever you might need, but it is able to enhance all that you've experienced, no matter how good it is, and make it better. It is able to fill whatever gaps you may feel and give you peace. And it is able to enable us with purpose so that as we live or as long as we live, we do so with the gospel that transforms lives and for the glory of the Savior forevermore. That sounds to me like something worth being thankful for.